Welcome to the Crownsman Podcast, Episode 11, Drilling Technology in Mining and Oil and Gas. I'm your host, Jared Downey, and this is Gaudi Molina.
Hi, everyone.
I felt like there was a more dramatic punch than we needed. We'll try it again. This is Gaudi Molina.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am good. I am excited, actually.
Why?
Because I think this is the, I don't want to say first, but it's the first, I guess.
First, are you referring to that it's our first show, like our full show in the studio?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's our first full podcast in the studio since we were at CIM.
Yeah, because all the other episodes that we've done have been cut. Yeah, we filmed here and then cut them in and cut it together. We're doing the whole. We got a guest coming in.
Yeah.
We have Rory's here.
Yes,
Rory Bamford is in the building. We always talk about him on the show,
but he's rarely ever seen. So it's kind of nice that
he's coming out of the shadows.
Although you know what's funny, I think we mention him a lot live. But he has been on other podcasts.
Yeah, because of the cut, too.
Yeah.
For people that have not watched this show before, we should tell you a little bit about why we're here and what we're doing. This is an industrial show. We cover. I'm going to let you do it. What do we cover today?
Is it because you always forget?
I always forget all six, yeah.
We cover agriculture, forestry, mining, construction, transportation, oil and gas.
Bam.
There you go.
And what we do is we bring in guests to talk about their companies, about the industries, about their challenges. We look for companies who are leaders in their industry, people who drive innovation. I've actually got some things written. I want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Accelerate technology, build new projects, keep employees safer, and make our economy stronger. And so we are going to cover, as we develop the show, everything from the technology that they use to the safety measures that companies are putting in place. Mm-hmm. So it's going to cover very broad, and that's what we do on the show. So we pick something like mining, we either look at the technology, or we look at developing new projects that are coming out. The show has been getting quite good feedback, and we're very happy with it, hence why we're on episode 11.
Yes.
We did it as a little test, and we realized there was a demand for it. People wanted to know more about industry. You know, they don't want to just watch a two-minute clip and, oh, there's drilling happening.
Not just that, but a lot of people also wanting to be part of the show, mm-hmm. and tell their side of the story or their information,
yep.
whatever it is, yeah.
And a lot of companies don't get a chance to sit down and really dig into what they do. So a lot of people might even know the brand, but they don't really know. Like when Bombardier came on, a lot of people don't know how heavy Bombardier is in transportation, that they're doing rail systems for underground mines.
Yeah,
people don't know that. Energold is joining the show. Let me just find this here. So Energold is the Energold Group. So they're a drilling company in mining, oil and gas. They also do I forget what it is. Like, let me just find it here. I'm losing my spot, but that's okay. Give me one second. They do the horizontal drilling. You will have to bear with me. This show sometimes does go off script, and especially when I'm on it. I wanted to see. There's three kinds of drilling that they do, and I can't. They do the energy, they do the mineral, and they also do. It's like drilling for water systems for municipalities and things like that. So we'll ask Fred. So we'll ask Fred a little bit more about that. Fred Davison is the guest. He's the CEO of Energold.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be joining the show to talk about their company, what they do, some of the technology they have developed. So that's going to be an interesting show. Audience feedbacks. I'm really losing it today.
Well, no, you know what? Audience feedback is always great. We ask all the time. We love that you guys get back to us, and I'm glad that you guys did, yep. And we'd love to kind of share.
Well, a couple of our top two are, one was from Malcolm, and obviously not going to say full names, don't want to embarrass anybody, but he gave a comment that I did want to read on the air, because it does, it brings up something that I've thought about, and it was good to hear someone else who's watching the show, that it's coming to their mind. He made a comment that all these info from Meg's reports and now shows are great for getting the info out. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But the problem is that it's always sort of the same information reports that they're putting out. It's not that he felt it wouldn't convince, and I'll read it word for word, repeating the same facts over and over will not convince those who are against new mine development and keeping existing mines open. Not really sure how we miners get past that. And that's a good question. My answer to that is I think we need to dig in and take the time to highlight very specific things so that people start to gain more understanding of it. There's a thing that, even in, this is a little bit of a offshoot, but there's things like in sports where you make stars for sports teams, and mm-hmm. then people get involved in it. When you highlight and get people start to become more comfortable and they get to know certain players in the industry, they'll start to follow them, they'll start to engage, start to understand, and of course that raises the comfort level. Mm-hmm. There's people that literally have in their mind that people go in a drill and they smash all through all the trees and destroy all the vegetation, and it's just not true. But if you never really got a chance to listen to anything or dig in to a company like Energold, how would you know?
Exactly.
Another one we got was from Sam. His feedback was, you might expand to aerospace companies somewhere in the Toronto area, interesting in mining other planets, moons, Mars, etc.
That's pretty interesting.
Sam, we will be covering that for sure.
That's for sure. I like that.
Yeah, that's going to be a whole we're going to make a segment about it.
So then we should add another one to the wall.
Spaceship to the wall, yeah. With a big drill on it. Going to give Fred is going to come in from Energold, and he'll give a lot of information that's going to be very helpful, but we'll give you just a snapshot of what they do. So we're going to go energy drilling. I'm just going to read this off. Drilling is a process whereby a hole is bored using a drill bit to create a well for oil and natural gas production. There are various kinds of oil wells with different functions. So there's exploration wells for finding oil, appraisal wells for studying feasibility, and assessing the characteristics of the petroleum that they're trying to extract. There's development or production. These are the drills that are actually pumping it out. Mm-hmm. So these are all different types of wells that need to get drilled. Relief valves for when there's an emergency, when there's a blowout. So they're like a backup system. There's an injection well. I'm going to read this, and I'm going to be honest. I try, and I don't really understand. I know that it's for injecting something into the well to keep levels balanced so that the oil can be extracted properly. But that's about as much as I know. An injection well is drilled to enable petroleum engineers to inject steam, carbon dioxide, and other substances into an oil-producing unit so as to maintain reservoir pressure or to lower the viscosity of the oil, allowing it to flow into a nearby well. There you go. they also do a lot of mineral. Energold does a lot of mineral drilling.
Yeah.
This is primarily an exploration diamond drill. Diamond drills are used to probe the contents of known ore deposits or potential sites. The thing with a diamond drill is what's unique about it is it drills down, and then so it might drill 200 meters down into the ground, but then it extracts a core sample. I don't know if you've ever seen anything about mineral drilling, you'll see that they have these boxes and they have all these samples. Then they get tested to see what is in, what rare earth minerals are or are not in them. Energold has about 240 drills. 120 of these are these drilling rings for the mineral drilling. I'm just going to read off a list. Highly portable diamond drilling rigs, a deep hole rig, highly mobile underground drilling rigs, reserve circulation rigs, or RC drills. Those are interesting. They're similar to an air core drill. It's not going as smooth to me for me today. Not going to lie.
But that's okay, you know, because our guest will be able to kind of answer all these questions.
Yeah.
And we will be able to go further deep into all the different drills mm-hmm. that they do have and what they do, how mm-hmm. they work, and how that works out in the industry.
Yeah, and basically what I want to touch on with the reserve circulation drill is they do the deep drilling, so they go up to like 500 meters down. That's what they're commonly used
for,
and they're big structures. So if you ever have when you get a chance, go on to Google and look up the reverse circulation rigs. They're quite something, mm-hmm. And then they also have reverse air blast rigs. I'm going to just touch on this one quickly: the horizontal directional drilling.
HDD.
What these are used to install like telecommunications and power cables, conduits, water lines, sewer lines, gas lines. They're used for crossing waterways, roadways, shore approaches, congested areas, and the big one, environmentally sensitive areas. So they also provide those drills provide that drilling service. Very interesting.
Wow.
If you want to look them up, go horizontal directional drilling. Look up some of the graphs and how they do it. It's quite something. Hydrovac trucks. I'm going to ask him about that because I don't. This is it got here. They're used to soft expose underground utilities. I honestly don't know what these are used for in detail. So I'm going to ask him about those as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they also manufacture water rigs, mineral rigs, multi-purpose rigs, parts, and tooling. So we're going to talk to Fred about that. So they do a lot. They've grown very fast. They've acquired companies. We're going to talk a little bit about their acquisitions, about the units that they have on site, some of the projects they've done. It's going to be an interesting interview, and we're going to have them on in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick quick break to talk a little bit about our sponsor.
Yeah.
I'll leave that to you, Gowdy.
Thank you. Yes, our sponsor, Cat Footwear. We're also giving away two pairs of boots, both men and women. The first are the men's, which are just behind me here, the Excavator XL. They're waterproof, composite, toe, insulated, slip-resistant, puncture-resistant. The second pair are the women's, just back here, and those are the driver's waterproof steel toe. And those are being given away if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Facebook.
at Crownsman P. Also, Cat Footwear is giving out 20% off their purchases online
mm-hmm.
with promo code CRWCAT at checkout. So if you don't win, you can still get 20% off a pair of really, really comfortable boots.
Yeah. And we have to give away the size 9s and the size 7s.
That's right.
So if you don't have your size but you want the boots, I actually wore the men's boots. I was on site for one of our we do advisory work for, you know, marketing and things like that for companies. So I was on site for a company called Savinaw Equipment. And so I took their boots out and I wore them all day. They are pretty, pretty comfortable.
Yes, they are.
So 20% promo code. We'll have the banner in the bottom.
Yeah.
And save 20%. You're eventually going to buy work boots. It's actually, this show was going to get released at in December. So right around Christmas time.
So it'd be perfect.
Yeah, it's a gift. If you can let Rory know, Rory's going to come in and talk a little bit about, introduce Fred, and we are going to get underway with the interview. I said to keep it under 10 minutes, and I did 15, so I'm 50% too slow. I'm going to So Energold, I'm going to read off who Energold is as a company. So you have a little idea as Rory's coming in. Energold Drilling Corp. is a diversified global drilling solutions provider serving mining, oil, gas, water, and geotechnical clients. When they founded, the company realized that the existing mineral drilling technologies and services available in the market were inadequate, and therefore, and we're going to talk about this in the show, developed a new specialized drilling rig that was highly mobile and would leave a minimal environmental footprint in order to meet the challenges of that particular operating environment. They have 240 drills worldwide, and they've done drilling projects in North America, South America, Africa, Asia, Central America, as well as the Caribbean. It's rainy outside. I would like to go to the Caribbean. And the Middle East.
All right. And we actually have Rory.
Rory, right, Rory.
Please step in.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Please do.
As Rory's settling in, I'm just going to read this in growth. In the past 4 years, Energold embarked on implementing its strategic goals to become a leading international specialty driller, successfully completing three acquisitions. EnviroDrill Limited out of the UK, Dando International Limited, also out of the UK, and Bertram International Corp, expanding its international footprint and diversity in its service offerings. So they're a growing company, which makes it interesting. You're missing something.
I am.
There you go.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, oh, not yet. No. All righty, so we're going to turn up your volume there.
How do you like our new studio?
It's pretty. I lost my words. No, it's nice. It's a really nice setup.
It's a little, when we first did the...
How am I for set up here?
I think you're good.
Good.
And welcome.
Thanks. Sorry, Jared.
Well, when we first were coming into the studio, because when we were at the show, there's so many people, there's a lot of action, so it's easier to have sort of the energy level up. But then I found actually here there's also not distractions, so you get to focus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier. A little bit easier. Yeah.
As doing the hosting?
Other than today, I'm having a real fun time today. I don't know what's going on.
It's okay. I think we all have our days.
Yeah. I believe, you know what? It's the competition factor. Raymond takes photos and helps with filming the show.
And then he took your spot.
He tried to take my spot, and that bothered
me.
Really? It really got to me. We'll talk about that later, Raymond.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Fred is here.
Fred is here.
And you
in the green room.
Yeah, you've got to kind of hang out and
talk. Got some
We should
conversations
put a camera on there.
Yeah.
That's actually a good idea for later on. You have you can throw in some of those
pre-show
clips.
Yeah.
The pre-show, yeah.
So
don't tell anybody though, because then the conversation's way better.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. Yeah. You get to sit there and kind of meander through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How did you, were you aware of their company or did you track them down?
No, I tracked them down. I can't even remember where I found them. I saw them on a list somewhere. I don't remember where that list was. But what I liked is that they are involved with mining and a lot of energy. And as he's saying, they're actually doing a lot with fiber optic now and as well geothermal.
Oh.
So they're kind of, they're going into all these different areas where drilling is really needed. But I liked it because we've done a lot of mining, so I wanted to. They're really pushing into the energy sector.
Oh, okay.
So I like that they're kind of not a crossover. They have two different divisions. Like you said, with those acquisitions, they've done four since the 1990s, I guess. So that kind of puts them in. And they actually operate using those subsidiaries' names because people know those companies by those names.
Okay, I'm going to make did you have a chance to talk to him a little bit about those acquisitions?
Yeah, the one, I can't remember the name. It starts with a B. And it's, so you can ask him about that.
Bertram,
yeah, and that's it.
I'll get into that a little bit with him too, because that's so they're actually operating using those same brands.
They use it because people know them by those names.
Okay. Well, this should be interesting. So, if you wouldn't mind, Rory, if you could go get,
I will go
Mr. Fred.
Yep.
And
enjoy the interview.
Yeah,
it'll
be
fun.
Yeah.
Yay!
Thanks, man. Good to have you back. We've the last two things we filled. You haven't been here.
Always disappeared. So I'll just have him walk around here then.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's always, it's funny because Rory ends up doing a lot of the pre-screening for the show. So I talked to Fred about a month ago, and then I met him for 2 minutes as he comes in,
yeah.
And then I got to sit down, and then we
yeah.
have the conversation.
Definitely
so
the conversation out there is
yeah.
just much more relaxed.
Yeah, that's like
you
said.
You don't feel, yeah.
That's where the show should
be. No pressure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello,
yes,
Fred.
Here we
yes.
Our
please
guest.
Have a seat here. We'll take a few minutes to
okay.
set you up.
Just have
yeah.
yeah.
So yeah, you'll need the headphones on.
Okay. And we're gonna have to scooch in a little.
Yeah, you'll have to be
nice and close.
We'll get real friendly here.
There
yeah,
you go.
Exactly.
Perfect. All right, can you, let's just have you introduce yourself.
Okay.
Just mic check.
Oh, thank you. No, no problem. Fred Davidson. I'm the president and CEO of Energold Drilling Corp, otherwise known as Energold Group.
Okay, perfect.
How's our sound check?
Very good. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, and if, you know, as we actually only met, I was just saying before you walked in on the show, we actually only met 2 minutes before the show started kind of thing.
I'm going to be testing you on some of those questions.
Yeah. and so, yeah, we don't rush through the conversation here. We want to kind of go through the questions and take our time and get to know your company, get to know your outlook on the industry. And, you know, we've got the questions that we went over about a month ago. But if there's new talking points you want to go in, we've got time.
Fair enough.
All right. Let me just find. I heard, on a separate note, I heard you got sent to the wrong location this morning.
Well, you can never trust Jerry.
Well,
he missed the east part, the Columbia part, and went to East
well,
Columbia.
The thing is, we keep having that happen because we don't send we have to send people the postal code as well.
Yeah.
And if they don't put in the postal code, Google will not send them to this location. They're
really?
Refusing.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
keep getting people going, and then that. So most of the time, it's actually our fault because we forget to put the.
I'm not blaming you on this one. It's much more fun to blame Jerry.
Yeah, he always blames me for
yeah.
everything. So
yeah.
He's got big shoulders.
let's talk a little bit about you. Your background. Did you found the company?
Yeah, I did actually. We were originally in the mining side. And when in the mining side, we found that the traditional methods for doing exploration, drilling, created a heck of a mess, didn't do anything for the social or community. And the end result, as an industry, we were tending to alienate rather than ingratiate ourselves with the local community. And as a result, we started off around 17 years ago, we picked up a small drill that we could move into a site without having to create roads. Mm-hmm. We could employ the locals to help us. And the program went really well. The locals were very supportive of us. We had minimal impact upon the environment. And especially when you're working in some of these communities, you're the first salary they've ever earned in their life. Mm-hmm. And it was really appreciated. We recognized as a mining company that the driller is the first impact he makes in the local community.
Right.
And if you make a mess, if you alienate the locals, the mining company's now got a huge hill to climb. So that initial drill would get down to about 75 meters. So it was pretty primitive. We've been upgrading those drills, basically evolving those drills now. And we call them modular. Everybody thinks of, if we say they're man-portable, everybody sort of wonders what sort of thing you've got. They look like a bit of a sewing machine. But when you put them all together, and the whole idea is you bring in parts that are fairly light, so you have the local community move them in on their traditional trails, not a cat road. You pay the locals, so they become involved with the program. It becomes their program. And when you put that rig together, it can drill like any conventional drill. So we assemble it on site.
Oh, so you are packing it in pieces then?
Oh yeah, ah, and we move it in with mules. We move it in with we've moved with dugout canoes. We've moved it with people just carrying it in helicopters. We've drilled from the Amazon to Papua New Guinea to the high Andes. They're very flexible because of their mobility, and yet they're a very powerful rig. Case in point, rather than one big engine that might weigh 1,000, 1,200 pounds, we'll have three small engines.
Oh.
Same horsepower, but you put them together. And the second thing we do is the drills are very simple. We've dumbed them down. as opposed to everybody else who's getting more fancy in their equipment. Mm-hmm. And when you're working in a remote location, the more you have on that rig, the more likely something's going to break. And ours are very robust machines. And the third part of it is the skill set of a lot of our drillers isn't high. And traditionally in a big drill program, you have mechanics there and everything else. We don't. Mm-hmm. We basically just have spare parts. And because it's modular, if a part breaks, they pull it out, insert the new part, and continue on drilling.
Oh, super easy.
So from what you're saying, then you're doing a lot of the initial.
Yeah.
Is that primarily what your business is?
Well, that's how we started out.
That's how you started out.
And what happens is you work with a client, you do a good job for them. Now they come in and they say, well, can you do something more for us? And sometimes these rigs will drill like a conventional rig. But sometimes when you get to certain depths, there's limitations time-wise on these rigs that slow you down. So then we have bigger rigs. And then some clients say, well, we like diamond drilling, which is a bit of, some people wonder what diamond drilling is. Mm-hmm. We've actually been accused of drilling for blood diamonds. in fact, it's a diamond encrusted bit. And as it cores down, it produces a core inside the rod. But that's time consuming, more expensive, gives high detail. But some clients will say, look, we want you to do, say, every fifth hole that way, but we want you to do RC, which is like a hammer down hole, and just blowing the chips up to give us less, faster penetration, a lot less expensive. And the diamonds confirms what they're reading, but the chips give them basic data. So we've expanded into that. And, of course, we've also expanded into drilling in the oil sands, drilling geothermal, geotechnical, and HDD. So we see ourselves as a sort of global drilling solutions provider. You bring us your problem, we'll find a solution for it.
Right. Okay. So how did you, where did you get your start, you know, to end up here with a company, you know, this size, it's grown, I mean, you've had acquisitions, where did it all... You know,
well, I used to teach at UBC in
in
accounting, and a friend of mine wanted to build a mine up in northern British Columbia, and he needed a CFO, so I got involved with him there.
Oh,
and then we built a second mine, and then Total took us over, the French oil company, and we worked with them for a few years, and then Total left Canada again, like they do every 10 years. And then we ended up, I was working with the Wheaton group with the Golden Bear Mine. Mm. And after that got sold off, looking around, so let's do exploration. So, yeah, my background is not exactly a geologist. I've got a BA, MBA, and a CA, but... and about one-third of the way through trying to get a PhD. So it's been a lot of experience more than anything else.
Right, so I guess when you were teaching at UBC, you weren't expecting to be running a drilling company
a few years later. No, this was one of those things that, you know, it walks across in front of you, and you see it, and it's opportunistic. It's something you see that has a real rationale for being there. It has value. And I think it's worked really well for us. When we first brought these rigs in and started working with them, the industry looked at us and say, well, again, it looks like a sewing machine. But it's now become a standard in the industry and gets a little more competitive now. Mm-hmm. But the other side is we're constantly making improvements. It's an evolutionary thing, both for environmental safety and productivity.
Right. Actually, you said when you first did it, they were 75. They were going 75 meters down.
Yep.
Now, what are they? What can you go to?
Well, the models we're using right now, we find about 1,000 meters. It starts to become fairly inefficient.
1,000 meters.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. You know, visualize the Toronto, the CN Tower piled on top of itself a couple of times, and you're pushing something the size of this glass down that.
I was expecting about 200 or 300. I wasn't expecting you to say 1,000 meters.
No, no.
And that must depend on what type you're drilling into, right? Or
generally, the more competent the rock, the easier it is. You're right. A lot of the things we run into isn't the rock itself, it's the issues you run into going down. You run into sand structures that takes your water away, and we use water circulating to A, remove the fines from what you're cutting with the diamonds, and B, to cool a bit. Mm-hmm. And if you lose water, you can't remove the fines, now you have a problem. So we have to use additives that sort of plug those holes. And by the way, all of our additives are non-toxic. They're all tested. Nothing that we use in terms of additives is environmentally unfriendly, contrary to the mythologies out there.
Right. And well, that's a big goal of our. Actually, before you walked in, we were talking about that. One of the feedback that we got from our last shows, which was talking, our last show was about getting mines off the ground. So we had a consultant come in, and he provided some really good information. And one of the feedback we got from the audience was that there's so much information. It's the same sort of messaging out over and over in all the magazines and now the shows. And there's not, but how are we going to make it so that people can learn and actually will start to support some of these new projects and that. And I think a lot of it is the educational aspect. Mines get maybe a 30-second clip on the news, and then it's gone. And usually it's when something goes wrong.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And so I think it's important to take that time to mention those types of things. Because once people realize that, and they next time they see the drill rig coming into their community, they have a different feeling towards it because they understand it just a little bit better.
I think we have to do our part, too. Mm-hmm. Part of it is education. Part of it is there are some bad actors in the industry. There's always some of those around. And as you pointed out, they're the ones that get highlighted. The fact that sort of 999 mines are operating professionally and with safety and conscious and one screws up, the one gets the press.
Right.
Yeah. And that's an ongoing problem. And the other problem is open pits aren't very attractive, let's face it. It's a big hole in the ground. But quite frankly, for the most part, those open pits are reclaimed in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be working more in towards underground mining, so the area of disturbance is very negligible.
Right.
In fact, we've designed our rigs, a model of our current rig, to go underground and drill into very tight, small areas that allows our clients to sort of avoid heavy expenditure in terms of money and times testing. 99 out of 100 times, what they're testing isn't a mine. So right. You want to do it with minimal impact, lowest cost possible, and allow them to walk away at the appropriate time or to get the information that they want to stay there and keep on working.
I'm sorry.
Actually, a question I did have about as well is the steps that you're taking, you've innovated some of these drills. Now, and you mentioned about competition. Are you seeing that the process, the drills getting taken apart and then get remanufactured on site? Are you seeing more and more companies do that now?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's definitely become one of the standards in the industry.
Yeah,
I mean, 10 years ago nobody would believe it. Now it is a standard because people are conscious of the economics involved. They are conscious of the social impact. They are conscious of the environmental impact. And these drills are very productive. So the end result is, I'll lose a driller or two and he'll start his own little drilling company on the side.
Right.
And I applaud it in one sense because, quite frankly, it's something the industry has to adopt. It has to lower the environmental impact. It has to make a more positive social impact where it's working. That's how we'll establish our credibility. There's no other way we'll do it.
Right. And you said about, so these drills, you're actually manufacturing these drills then?
Yep.
And, and are you doing the, you said that you developed the underground. Are you manufacturing the underground?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But for ourselves, not for other people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, no, I don't want to come in. I don't want to tell them everything we're doing.
One of the things that I know the audience find interesting is challenging markets. And you've worked across, I think it was 25 countries.
Yeah.
What are some, you know, and I don't want you to pinpoint anybody out, you know, or anything like that. Actually, maybe I do.
That's
but
all right.
You don't feel no pressure.
No, not at all.
No, I'm wondering, what are examples of some of the really challenging environments, markets that you've had to try to enter?
We're facing a multiplicity of issues, and it's getting more and more complex. There was a time you just move into a country type of thing. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the countries are very specific in what they want to see.
Yeah.
They want to see employment. In many cases, they want to see their own sort of heroes in the area do what the work that you're doing. And
right.
They may not be able to do it, but they insist on doing it. Mm-hmm. You're running into increased regulation, such as transfer pricing. There's this whole thing that the governments have said that, well, you're moving equipment into this country, therefore you need to price it accordingly, fair market pricing, which I have to get an independent consultant to do for $20,000.
Uh-huh.
And then that's what they assess the importation duties on, et cetera, et cetera. Or you'll get another situation, transfer pricing, where we're shipping and supervising a project in another country, and or in Canada, for instance, they'll say, okay, you have to add 10% on to every bill for the effort you're putting in. The other country, they'll say, well, you can only add 5% on. So all of a sudden we're getting zinged for 5%, which we can't deduct anywhere else.
Right.
It's constant bureaucracy, I'd say, is the biggest issue we're facing. Environmental, not so much, because I think we have a high standard there. The other one is social, communities, because a lot of the work that's done in the mining, the money ends up going to whatever federal government exists and never gets back to the local community.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to resent that. And yet those taxes we pay, whether it be a driller or the ultimate mine, are not cheap. They're mm-hmm. not there. And yet the local community isn't seeing the benefit of it other than maybe direct employment. And they resent it, and you run into social issues. So it's very much country by country. It's very much culture. Some countries are very aware of mining. They encourage it. Others are trying to place their own heroes in that place, so you can't work in their country until they've taken every idea you've got. And other countries are just prohibited because of the history they've had with mining, or maybe mm-hmm. just lack of knowledge of mining.
Yeah. What is it like to go into a community? I think when we talked before, I think it was the Dominican Republic that you were in, and you came in with your drill rigs and ended up hiring people to pack in the drills and get everything set up. What is that from start to finish process for recruiting the local community to do something like that?
Actually, the Dominican Republic was the very place we did our first drilling.
Oh.
And with that 75-meter rig. And the local community was very poor. They were sitting on an area that was interesting from a geological point of view, and a geologist had identified it as a target. And our local managers are always local. They're not a gringo imported into the country. Mm-hmm. So he went in, he explained the process, and depending on the situation, you may have sort of the head man in the local village will help allocate the jobs out. In this case, it was sort of a family village, and sort of granddad would sort of say, okay, you know, Jose, it's your turn to work this week. And we work with that. Now, the skill set varies. If somebody's carrying rods or carrying equipment, skill set's not very high. When they're working on the drill itself, not actually operating the drill, but working on the drill itself, there has to be a higher skill set, and we train.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, that investment we make in training works for us because that person ultimately will take and go work on another project in the Dominican Republic. As his skill gets better, he then becomes maybe an assistant driller and then a driller. Mm-hmm. And in a case like Mexico, we only have, I'm using the word gringo, but that only applies to actually theoretically to Americans, but only one North Americano in all of Mexico, and we've got about 350 people working there. So we evolve to the local community, and we become, as far as the local community is concerned, we become a Dominican company or we become a Mexican company, mm-hmm. and we manage within that scope as well. And I think that's a critical. You know, you're trying to bring value to the community, and at the same time, by doing that, you're also having them become part of the program. And that's how you address a lot of these stages where people don't do that. They come in, impose themselves. We've got the right to drill. Get out of our way. Mm-hmm. And a year later, their drill's burnt, and they're all chased out of the country.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, you have to be very careful.
And I guess from a government, even if you're working with a government that's difficult to work with, when all of a sudden they've got 350 employees, there's a certain amount of pressure on the government to work with you as well.
Very definitely.
Yeah.
Very definitely. We try and work with the government, obviously. They change rapidly, and, mm-hmm. and in some of these countries, they're not necessarily the best places for people to work with. But they're a reality. That's the country's culture, and we try and work within that culture.
Yeah. I was going to ask, I'm just going to find my place here so I make sure we... next part is the industry. Mineral prices. I've invested a bit over the years into the mining industry, and following those prices, actually one of my very first investments where we bought bars of gold. This is way back, and then silver.
Yep.
And then we watched it. So we learned very quickly that things can catch
the falling knife.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. How does a company like Energold, who is dependent on these exploration companies, actually, I'm going to take a step back to clarify something. You are the contractor commonly for the companies. So who is the company that's actually getting you to do the work?
Generally, the mining company itself. Mm-hmm. When I say mining company, it can be an exploration company that doesn't have a mine, but generally the mining company itself. So it's a direct one-on-one relationship.
Right. So how, as the industry and prices are fluctuating, how does a company like Energold, not
survive
but also grow? I mean, you've expanded.
Yeah.
And you haven't expanded in the easiest market.
No. It's interesting because, about 2011, 2012, we did about $120 million doing minerals only.
Mm.
But at that time, we sort of sensed that the market was getting soft, and we did a couple of acquisitions. One of which was a company that works in the oil patch, drilling the oil sands mines, and their mines. So to us, it was no great evolution, but oil responds differently than other commodities.
Right.
So that's kept us quite busy. I think our high for that was $50 million with them. So that held us up right there. At the same time, minerals are highly volatile, and you can't invest heavy money and count on every one out of every 4 years being great and 3 years being sort of slogging.
Right.
So the other side we have is we saw that we have a talented crew. We've got the equipment. We've gone into some non-mineral work, infrastructure work primarily.
Yeah, I was seeing that.
Yeah, and it's going nuts, quite frankly. Where recently minerals have sort of softened a little bit again,
right?
Silver and gold. The non-mineral side has been growing fairly substantially. In fact, we hit a low in 2016 where nobody was drilling. Oil prices were at $30. All the minerals were down. We're now about, 45% over that. We're looking at hitting sort of in the area between, if you use our second quarter results as an indicator, should do about $90 million this year. Half of that will be non-minerals. Energy will be one. And it's growing this year. Will probably be about a 50% increase over last year. We have clean energy. We do geothermal,
right.
Ground loop geothermal. That's very dramatically growing in the United States. It's starting to catch on in Canada, too. And then we do other drilling for infrastructure, such as geotechnical, for roads and bridges and what have you. And the other one we've picked up about a year and a half ago was HDD, or horizontal drilling, and it's not the oil patch drilling.
Yeah, I want. Yeah, that's one of the things I actually wanted to ask you a little bit more about, because it's kind of a new thing for me.
It is. It's what it's primarily designed is we have drill rigs that drill underneath rivers or roads or what have you. And we install infrastructure, everything from water lines to, the big one is fiber optics right now.
Right, yeah.
And we're finding that, A, that's a real growth industry, especially as everybody's switching over from copper to fiber optics. You don't want to tear up a road just to put a little thing this wide across the road. So we drill it. And we've just completed a fairly large project in Calgary and south of Calgary. We've got a couple more coming out in Alberta because they're really moving into this. All of these subdivisions that were previously copper wired, now they're going fiber optics. We're doing some work in BC as well, and pretty well through the western provinces. And interestingly enough, in Central America, where They've been a massive construction in Central America on buildings, and everything used to be above ground there, so it looks like a rat's nest when you drive through one of these major cities, and it's surrounded by buildings that are 40 stories high, but a rat's nest of wires, and they're putting a lot of that underground, and we're finding we're quite busy there, and that's an expanding market for us as well. So it's that plus the geotechnical work is, it's still a very small part of what we do overall, but you're looking at margins that are running up in the 40 and 50 percentile. So
right.
It sort of brings up the averages from the mineral drilling, which is pretty tough right now.
Yeah. And do these kind of contracts, are they varying from government to private? And
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we'd be working for equivalent to, say, a TELUS.
Right.
And other times it would be a government having their water lines installed in a community.
Right.
So it depends who and what you're working for. Generally, our contract is, though, with the contractor that takes on the whole project.
Right.
So we're not directly, say, dealing with TELUS itself. We're dealing with the contractor who's dealing with TELUS. And our job is to run those lines, and then they do all the wiring and what have you after that.
Right. So when you're looking as a company, you know, you've taken on some of these partners. How much these partners, how recent is that? You've taken, I think, the three companies that you've taken over. Has that been over? Has that been fairly recently, or has that kind of been over the life of the company?
2011 was the acquisition in the oil and gas. 2011, we also acquired a manufacturing company that manufactured drill rigs because we couldn't get drill rigs at the time. It was 6 and 9 months delay. Unfortunately, again, with drill rigs, when everybody's no longer drilling, there's a lot of drill rigs out there.
Yeah.
So things have been not brilliant on that side.
Yeah.
But the other one, say most recently, was 2 years ago, and that's this horizontal drilling. And in all cases, we own 100%. They're subsidiaries of ours. We try and keep the previous management on because they know what they're doing. There's no sense in trying to reinvent the wheel. And we try and give them bonuses to encourage them to perform. And I think they're part of the team now. And it allows us to be able to, we ran into a proposal, it was over in Europe for one of our projects, and we were able to fly somebody out of Canada over there to show our guys how they could do the project and how they could bid the project and that. And having that skill set within the group is really working well for us.
Yeah. When a company like yours, you know, you talked about going over into Central America. Is it, the much smaller scale, but I used to have a little eavesdrop company. So a lot of our work was, and this is 19 years old with a little eavesdrop truck, and we're climbing all over roofs, and most of our work would come from, probably 50% of it would come from the referral.
Yep.
People going to know the brand, or they'd see us across the street working, and that's
walk
that's
across how we the street,
across hey, the street, yeah. and we'd keep going. Yeah. So we'd always start early, so we had a few hours after to do the second job that we'd likely get. How much of your business is like that? Is this a lot of it is bidding on contracts, or is it you've worked with these companies now for 10 years, so they keep using you? I mean, I'm sure it's a mixture, but sort of what would that mixture be?
You nailed it. It's a mixture. Certain companies include us in their tender, for instance. So when we're working for a contract, they have to demonstrate they have the capability of doing the entire contract, and we're sort of brought into it at that point in time. And at that point, it's sort of we're hugging each other and we all work to get the contract. In other cases where if you get into the mineral side, it's most cases you're tendering now. In 2011, 2012, they were just happy to see you show up. Now they're pretty tough on the negotiations. So it's really a function of which market you're talking about. The industrial one, we tend to do it through a contractor, a lead contractor, you know, the big guys. And they provide the credibility and we provide the technical skill set.
Yeah. What do you think, kind of two more questions that I'd like to ask is, what are you, moving forward, you've probably already touched on it, but what do you think the biggest challenge is, not just for companies like Energold, but the mines that are trying to expand or start new mines? What do you think the biggest challenge for them is and is going to be?
Capital.
Yeah.
It's the marketplace is not paying attention to the industry at all. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking institutional, they tend to go for the equivalent to exchange investment type situations. If you're talking retail, right now they're still chasing marijuana and cryptocurrencies.
Right.
And especially for the juniors, miners, that's their basis. And we're seeing one after another junior literally scraping to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. And it's too bad because, we have in Canada that's one of our leading industries, our knowledge in the mining industry. We have a highly qualified geotechnicians, geologists, engineers. That's what they do, and they do it very well. If that size of that activity shrinks too much, all of a sudden you've lost your leverage. You don't have that basis to call back on, and I think it's critical that get maintained. I'm not sure how. I don't think really that's a government type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think they should probably stay out of our business as much as possible. But it really is where we have to make sure there's awareness out there. And it starts with the firms themselves, but it also goes back to the brokerage community, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the brokerage community is paying attention because there's not enough commissions for them to pay attention. And this recent thing of getting rid of the analysts is really detrimental to the industry. And in fact, people like yourself are critical to the industry, making people aware of what the industry does, what it can do, and the potential in the industry, and create more knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is a little aside. There was an article the other day about the Trans Mountain Pipeline and saying, okay, it's going to be triple the number of amount of oil coming down the Trans Mountain Pipeline. And somebody in the same article said that means the 30 tankers a year are going to become 300. And I looked at that, and by the way, this is a reputable newspaper. I don't normally write newspapers, but I pointed out either they're shrinking the size of tankers or my mathematics is all wet, you know. And that's what's happening is there's a lot of false information out there or incomplete information, and our job is to correct it and educate the marketplace. And I'm not sure we've done a good enough job yet doing that.
And I think the one thing that we found is that people are interested. There was a We work on the marketing side for some supply companies, and there's sort of been a trend that people only want sound bites.
Yep.
But the market, people will take what the market gives them. So people are being given sound bites, so that's what they take. Now with things like our show and other podcasts, people will sit there and watch these for 3 hours. People want information. They want to understand. They don't. There may be certain parties that are pushing for sound bites because they don't want people to know.
No.
But if you give them the information, people will sit there. They are going to sit there and listen to. I think our average viewership on this, people watch for 20, 25 minutes an episode because they want the information and where are you going to get it. The last, well, it's going to be a two-part question I have for you. For you, sort of what are your strengths? Because a lot of people watching this show, they're not going to be people that are necessarily just in business or at the executive level. They're people that are trying to move up through the ranks or start their own business or things like that. So for you, what do you bring to the table that in a tough market has allowed your business to still grow? And then the second part is, what does Energold do as a company to gain that reputation and to continue to grow?
Yeah, fair enough. Basically, A, I've got a lot of experience, and hopefully I don't relearn it too often. I got to admit, I'm an older guy, but I'll tell you this, I'm always open to new ideas.
Hmm.
And I think too many of us are saying, this is what I've always done, this is what I should continue doing. And that's rubbish. I mean, things are changing dramatically. The environment we're working in is changing dramatically, and we have to be prepared to change. And I think I'm very good at that. I think I try and motivate my team that way as well. And believe me, that's like pushing a rope. Especially in the drilling industry, because the reaction is, well, we've always done that, mm-hmm. or I've never done that, so why should I do it now? And I don't want to just say, do it because I told you to.
Right.
It won't happen. You got to educate them to the point of, this is how you can do it, and this is what it means. So I do not a bad job of that. not as well as I'd like, I guess, but not a bad job. I think when you get back then, that leads to the second side, is Energold itself. I mean, we were strictly mining. We were strictly doing exploration. And quite frankly, about 90% of our competitors are in that market. And that's great. But right now, mining is definitely feeling the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And our reaction is, we still have more than enough rigs that if mining was to come back, we can generate that $120 million worth of mining. But I'm not going to sit here praying that it's going to come back tomorrow. And my attitude is, we've got expertise, we've got the equipment, we've got the talent pool. Let's get out there and do drilling. I'm not going to try and be developing games, et cetera, for the internet. But we have that expertise, and let's use it. And I think we're seeing that through the fact that the non-mining is growing way faster at the current moment than mining is. And it tends to be a little more stable, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And I think going forward, I mean, I won't put any color to it other than the whole industry and in the mining, in the drilling industry, especially right now, is struggling. And we've been going through the same struggles. And I think, though, that game, the theory that we've evolved into, our strategy, is valid. And if mining was to stay down next year, I think with the growth we're seeing on the other sectors, we will continue to grow. And if mining picks up, then I'll be just a happy puppy as well, because that just means that much more.
Right.
But yeah, we're very flexible. I think we're very innovative, and we're not afraid to take on challenges.
Right. Well, thank you very much. We cover. I think we hit most of the talking points.
Well, hopefully we did.
No, we appreciate you coming through. We're going to we gotta do a little bit of outro stuff, and then I'll come back and then talk to you off camera for a little bit, if that's all right with you.
No
and
problem at all.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah. I'll take those so they don't. Here you go.
I promise I won't break it.
All right. Thank you, Fred. Okay, we're going to wrap up quickly. Well, we don't have to be that quick. We're not in that much of a rush, are we? Are you in
no,
a rush?
No.
You're always so busy, guys. Just relax.
Oh, no worries. I'm here for the next 4 hours. No, what is it?
What time is it? What time is it? Oh, one oh, it's, oh, one. It's two in the afternoon.
No, it's one.
Oh, one. Yeah.
One in the afternoon.
Wow,
but that was a lot of information, a lot of things I didn't know. And even just from reading what we did read about drilling and the different types of drilling,
yeah,
he definitely got a little more in-depth with that.
I don't know about you, but I find that every time we do the show and we cover it, I'm thinking, well, we need about 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Like, because...
it's just not enough time.
It's just not, yeah, like diamond drilling. You can or the energy drilling sector, or the I keep forgetting what it's called, which is
HDD.
Really the HDD. But what does that stand for?
Horizontal drilling. Something.
When he's we saw I'm thinking.
Oh no, horizontal directional drilling.
Directional drilling. That's the part they keep messing up. Yeah, and I think in the future we do need to start doing these parts, and maybe not like consecutive episodes, but book people. You know, I mean, I'd love to get Fred back in here.
Yeah.
I mean, you just scrape the surface, and we can't. I mean, our podcast, we're not planning on, you know, the Joe Rogan podcasts. Sometimes they're 3 hours long. That's not really what we're planning to do. Of course, like Fred, we got to be open to new ideas.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's so much to dig into, and I'll be honest, I wouldn't get everybody back that we've had on. Some people are a little dry, or they're not engaged, or they don't seem to be fully invested into what we're doing. But I mean, Fred came in; he had his answers, but he's happy to go off script. I mean, I touched, I think about half the questions, or maybe a quarter, were the ones that were on script, and
yeah.
He just kind of went with everything. And guys like that, if we come up with specific shows, I think just to dig into that one, and I think that's more what people want, because like that feedback, I think the guy's right. There is just a lot of the same information over and over and over, and people want the specifics. They've heard all of that before.
Yeah, and exactly. A lot of the information is the same because we have such limited time that the introduction is always going to be that the same.
Yeah.
You know, and once we start hitting the more interesting and more the information that people want to hear, we start running out of time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we got to so that'll be our goal is to do series of so bring in a company like Energold and a gentleman like Fred, maybe a couple of different people from the company
to
examine different areas of that. So that's a conversation I'm going to have with him. Let's go. I've mixed up my papers so much now. I don't know. We already went over the sponsorship, right? We'll probably show that banner one more time in the bottom for Kat so people know where to get the discount.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Get Christmas presents for people, especially if someone works outside. Get them boots. Trust me, I've worked outside. A new pair of boots is always welcome.
Not just if you work outside. If you like to hike or you like the outdoors, they have great casual boots as well. So... just casual shoes.
Yeah, if you get a pair of cat boots and they're not comfortable, let us know and I'll apologize directly to you on the air. Guarantee you, I will not have to make an apology. Feedback, where can people talk to us publicly, privately, if they want to become a sponsor on the show? Where can they go?
You can email info@crownsman.com. Or, you know, you could private message Jared at Jared Downey. Or myself at Gaudi Molina 2. That's Instagram, Facebook.
Oh, you're Gaudi Twitter. Molina 2 on all those?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, well, you learn something new every day.
Something new every day.
you can also follow us at Crownsman P, also Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Continue to follow and subscribe on YouTube, Crownsman Partners. And visit our website. There's a lot of information on our website. You can always watch more videos there as well. Mm-hmm. And that's crownsman.com/podcast.
Yeah, we have all the highlights. We have highlights and interviews and all that stuff. Exactly. Oh, and the Crownsman Podcast group.
Yes.
You can go with that on Facebook. That's where a lot of the fun happens.
And that's where you should, wow, what is the word I'm looking for?
It's that kind of, it's the rain.
Oh, sorry, you should become a member.
A member.
Of the Crownsman Podcast group and invite as many people as you want, mm-hmm. Because we post contests, events, you know, our show or live moments coming up. Yep. All of that goes on there, so you will be, you know, entering to win a bunch of stuff.
We gave away $600 worth of boots. Yeah, on one of our last live shows, yeah.
So please, please become a member, join the group, invite as many people as you want.
Become a sponsor for the show. Talk to us, ask us questions,
and continue to send us feedback. We love it.
Yeah, it was lots of fun having this feedback. So thank you for watching the show. Sign off with a simple thing, just to let you know. We call ourselves the voice of industry, but to clarify, we're actually just the stage. That's all that we're trying to be. We try to give you a platform, allow companies to come on, talk about their companies, talk about their employees, the work, the industry, the challenges. That's what our goal is. We're the stage, but ultimately, you and the companies are the voice of industry. Thank you for watching, and we will see you next show.
Goodbye.